Hello, Zachary.
Hi, Marco. Nice to see you.
You too. Here comes John. We have a waiting room now. But you're used to that in your practice, I imagine.
I am.
Hey.
Hi, John. Nice to see you.
Hey, Zach. Hi, Marco.
John?
Good to see you.
You too.
Back.
Looks like a neat room you're in, Zach. I
Oh,
haven't.
you haven't seen this one before?
No. I see a four quadrants poster.
That's a Klinghardt poster. That's a four quadrant diptych. That's family pictures that I put up in a kind of follow through with my family constellation therapy work. I'd never actually put a physical photographic family tree, and I found it to be quite energizing when I first created it. So that's up here too. Yeah. It's my COVID cabin in the woods.
Is it literally a cabin?
Yeah.
Is it in literally in the woods?
Yeah.
It's a faux cabin. He made up the woods.
Not a metaphor.
Yeah.
It looks like a cabin to me. It looks very authentic. It has a really raw, sort of plain, but obviously very literary feeling to it.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was really, it was like almost like a cattle lean-to that I finished,
Oh, wow.
and it took me far too long, and I will not do that again. And there's no glorification in manual labor from my camp.
You're not into the throw thing anymore.
Wielding a hammer feels great in the moment. I will grant it that, and I did enjoy it, but, yeah, I think that was my last foray into that whole field. I think I stick better to writing.
Cool.
Yeah.
But you have a safe haven for that practice. That's
I
cool.
do. I do. Yeah.
Well, I'm just pasting the link in, a direct link to this, because I was a little worried about people connecting. I'm hoping that Mary and Heather could join us. But we could just hang in the
Is this an
meantime.
organizational meeting, or is someone did someone bring some work in they were going to focus on? I'm not sure about what we're doing today, but if we're looking at somebody's work, I didn't get a chance to look at it, so.
This is the first of several meetings, and we decided that we would actually just meet with those who are going to be here. And hi, Mary.
Hey.
Hey guys. Welcome. Hi, Mary.
I was
Good to
just
see you all.
expressing,
See.
letting John know, Mary, kind of the purpose of this meeting, and letting him know this was the first of the 12 week. And I
Yeah.
think we had originally considered sharing work before, but then I think Margot didn't feel quite ready. I was half and half, and so we decided maybe that this would be a great first meeting just
Yeah.
to connect before rolling everything out.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Should we give it a few more minutes? What do you think, Marco?
Let's give it another minute in case Heather can join us. She has a busy life, so and sometimes the time slippage can occur,
I like your confidence.
otherwise known as being late or just spacing
You know what? I
it.
like your Marco, your outfit. You look like, I
Check
don't
this
know.
out.
Oh, I get it. Okay.
The Don Quixote?
It is.
Oh, I love that.
Well,
That's
my
cool.
brother had this shirt and it didn't fit him anymore. He gave it to me and it was kind of tight around the neck, and I
Well,
asked
the
Kayla to.
scarf around the neck gives you a very gay desperado kind of.
Well, it comes from me.
That's it over.
I understand. I've realized that I go out and there's this kind of admixture of people who are and are not covering their faces, even out and about in public parks and on sidewalks and things like that. And I began to feel like it would be, I am a little bit concerned about the coronavirus, and I don't want to be a transmitter. I don't want to catch it, etc. But it feels more polite to just cover my face if I'm going to be.
And it's so much more fashionable.
Right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, it has an aura to it as well, I've found. So we could get started, and then if Heather joins us, if she does, and maybe she'll, if she doesn't today, maybe she will in a future session. Zach, you were just explaining to John that we didn't have anything to review today. We were more going to reconnect. It's been a while. And talk about how we could proceed and go about the next, I guess, 12, 11 weeks and what we would like to have happen. And I'd like to hear how everybody is doing and where they're at in their work, really specifically, but really at that juncture between your life and your work. Yeah. And I would like to share some of that myself. I don't often have an opportunity to talk about, talk shop, essentially, with other writers. And even though it's, it's the one of the main purposes of Infinite Conversations and Metapsychosis is to enable these kinds of interactions. And I'm feeling in particular, and I have been feeling, and I think Zachary, we shared this, like an urgency around reconvening this space and moving to another stage in our own creative process. I want to manifest. I want to bring forth what is within me that has been within me for a while, and I've been nurturing, through my own practices, but also through our collective. And so to bring attention back to the collective and how that could be a nurturing space and a catalytic space and a supportive space, I feel would be beneficial to myself, and I hope to all you and whoever else comes into the space and watches this video, if they do, since we're recording this. And just that said, I went out for a walk with my bandana, and down the block I passed a house. It was a very cute little house with a lot of plants out front, different kinds of plants, lavender and small like kind of viney things. I recognized the person who was outside tending to them. She's a neighbor, and she's one of the co-heads of the neighborhood like kind of organization. They advocate for issues related to our neighborhood and put on a picnic and things like that. Anyway, we got to talking, and she's sort of a writer and she's sort of imaginal kind of person. And something about just our talking, which was about life updates and what's been going on. But she shared that she has a screenplay that she has been conceiving and wants to share it with somebody, wants to do something with it, but hasn't been able really to find the space within herself or in her constellation of relationships to bring it into to bring it down into the world. And I just thought, wow, this is why we exist in a way, like as this collective would be for somebody like that, who is ourselves in other guise, in another phase space. And I suggested she might write a couple pages, 2 to 3 pages, because she's a former, maybe an archaeologist, I forgot what she said, but a scientist who has sort of moved on to another part of her life and does like online work, copywriting. She works with a website called something like, Enlightened Network, and she began telling me about this multi-dimensional kind of trans-temporal story she had in her head. And I thought, oh, Mary, you might connect with her, you know, around like your shared scientific background. And
yeah.
So anyway, it just happened as this morning as I was walking that I came upon a neighbor who has a connection. And that's part of it too, is that I would like this space to sort of grow, like kind of like one of those climby, viney plants in the yard, something that starts to take on different tentacles and shapes and becomes available for other people, and becomes a, you know, like a milieu that is, that just supports the writing process for all of us. So those are just some opening remarks, and we'd love to hear what y'all are thinking and feeling, how you're feeling and where you're at.
Mary, we haven't heard from you, so I want to give you the opportunity just to check in.
Okay. Yeah, I'm super excited to have this group and like learn from you guys and get to see the exciting stuff that you've been kind of, that's been simmering in your brains. I've been in a pretty fruitful phase of writing recently, and it helps that a lot of my paid work dried up during the pandemic, and so that had the like silver lining that I got to do some creative stuff recently. And what I'd love to do, actually, like to, when it comes time to bring stuff and talk to you guys about it, I've been thinking, like last week, Marco, you said, oh, like, is what you're going to share going to go on Metapsychosis? And it got me thinking about what projects I've got that would be best suited to Metapsychosis. And I was doing some computer archaeology, kind of digging through old files, and I found an old novel that I had started and then abandoned, and I had sort of considered it a learning experience. It's like, oh, that didn't quite work as a novel, but good, it taught me something, and now I'll move on. But I found it had some really cool ideas in it about like the liminal zone between childhood and adulthood. Like what do those things mean, and what does it mean to make those transitions? And it had a kind of fantasy setting and was using those fantasy elements as symbols for that. And so, yeah, I was thinking that that meeting up with you guys, knowing that I'll be meeting with you and a little bit accountable to you, will help me dust it off.
Just a little?
Well, I know you guys aren't going to be mean with me if I'm not, if I'm failing to deliver every 2 weeks. But just knowing that, like, maybe that somebody is waiting to read stuff will give me that pressure that I need, because those themes about childhood and adulthood, I think, are things that have kept circling back to a lot, and tied up with ideas of family too, because those are inextricable. And so I think I'd really like to give the idea, yeah, the attention that it deserves. So anyway, that's what I had in mind.
Well, I, for one, would certainly look forward to that, Mary, because a lot of what you mentioned is part of my personal passion. So yeah, I would love to support anything without any pressure whatsoever on a 2-week basis to come forth. That all sounds really exciting.
Cool.
Yeah. I also want to just thank you, Marco, for just referencing the Gospel of John and the, you know, the urgency behind that. I certainly feel that myself. Something I do want to bring forward, just because it's already been put on the table, is I'm really interested in, I want to see how we can honor what you're mentioning, Marco, around this being a place that people can swing into and get a taste of, but also want to honor I think what's really appropriate for certainly projects that are quite deep and personal, to how to healthily hold a container that is solid and secure for healthy incubation, basically. You know, all things that grow require containers that are non-permeable. So perhaps there could be something on the table around the idea that if people want to come, we could have specific times where, you know, someone wants to dip in, it's not just an open forum the entire time, you know, so that we have a gestation period that is non-permeable so that we can really sink in and gain the trust and, you know, allow ourselves to open up knowing the safety is there. And then when someone wants to dip in and explore, and they can at a specific time, and we will know what that is. So that's just an idea that I wanted to make sure we throw out there, because I don't think the right thing is to just have every session available to anybody. I think that would actually be destructive to the process.
Mm. Yeah, definitely, like these 12 weeks, and that's kind of an artificial designation. Maybe we can talk about that and why. Because we may have different rationales for even agreeing to that. And we may agree to different degrees. But I think, like, for the sake of, I mean, there's sort of like a system view that I'm taking, and also more of a microcosmic view. And so, like, at a systems level, I would like to see this sort of propagating, mm-hmm. you know, space. But at a micro level, I want to finish my poem, and you know, I want you guys to finish what you are, you know, want to bring forth, and whatever serves that process is, I think, what is really the key thing here. And the rest, I imagine, would take care of itself if that's happening. And I don't want one to be a substitute for the other, because that's I've definitely noticed myself that I can kind of flee the intensity of the creative process into a system, you know, or into another project, or into a collective even. So having like it be focused is a value that I share.
Great. I mean, we can support you in, you know, both of those, the balancing and also, you know, the diving in. John, and you've been, yes. I'm sure if you've been engrossed in something else, or if you've been taking notes, or.
Yes, thank you for making this happen, everybody. I feel like I'm moving through a birth canal. Very intense contractions, and it hurts. What I want is, I want to, and I mentioned this, I've been dialoguing with Marco already about this. I want to create a subtle infrastructure. And many of us have been reading Aurobindo and Gebser, so this isn't too far-fetched. I wouldn't use this language with anybody except you guys. And I know Zach is interested in Edgar Cayce and those Ingo Swann, the late great psychic of all times.
I was.
Yes, God bless him. So I guess we're in a phase space, whether we want to be or not. And I'm a very, I'm a practitioner of social dreaming, really. And I think good writing actually is social dreaming. By that, I don't mean it comes through a personality, but I don't think it's for necessarily just that person's self-expression. I just wanted to share a dream briefly that I had recently, and one that I had last night. And I think the one that I had last night is really important, simply because I had it last night, and I'd forgotten that we were scheduled for this writing event. And right before, I woke up in the middle of the night, then I went back, and I have like a dream yoga practice, but I was thinking about, before I started to snooze again, nouns, verbs, and prepositions. I think about those kinds of things. And what are nouns and verbs and prepositions? And this is also a very deep philosophical question. But you know, those words like on, off, in, at, between. So in this dream, I'm looking at an object. It's like a tapestry with embossed writings stitched into it. I am making a copy of this. I'm writing it down, a copy of what I see stitched into this tapestry. Then I am looking at objects in a box on a wall. The box is like this and it's open. So it's sort of like a doll's house, you know? And I am, I can touch the objects inside of the box and I can rearrange them. And I am painting some of the objects different colors. I am painting long cylindrical shapes, a creamy beige warm color. A woman enters the room and I tell her, this is handmade. Then there is another series and I am working with words. I am writing the sentence. I am working with the sentence, Mary McCarthy at Power Relations. Mary McCarthy is a famous writer, a favorite of mine. She was on the radical left. She was a communist, actually. She was very outspoken and very controversial in many, many ways. And she also wrote a famous novel called The Group, which many think of as a classic feminist description. And then I think I'm working with language here in the dream space and working with nouns and verbs and prepositions. So be careful what you ask for, because your unconscious, I think, will set into motion a kind of dynamic. Then I had this one about 2 weeks ago. This was very strange. The dreamer is fully aware of morphing shapes in a blob of glowing liquid, which is a few feet away from me. So I'm watching this blob, this glowing blob. And as I continue to watch the blob in a kind of detached state, it turns into a human shape. Then suddenly I become a benevolent being with a spherical shape. And I visit a woman who is in great distress. And I look down upon her from a higher space. This is very 4D, 5D to a 3D space. I touch her face gently. Somehow my hand can go through one dimension into her dimension. And I touch her face and I say, you are precious to us. I say, reflect upon what I have conveyed to you. And then I start to weep. I weep with gratitude. Then I am in a large corporate looking space, emanating a clear light. It's a glass building and it's empty. No one is there. And there are lots of condensed desks and computers and file cabinets in the center of this gigantic room. And I am looking for a clock, but I cannot find one. I have another appointment soon, but I don't know what time it is. And then a man appears at the door. He has no shirt. He is barefoot, wearing loose blue jeans. He's clean shaven, with a shoulder-length brown hair, a lean physique, classically proportioned. He has this physique of a nimble mountain climber. I am sitting on the floor, and he sits beside me, making gentle eye contact. His skin appears as smooth as alabaster. And as I gaze at him, I start to remember that I had met him before. He says, I have just been amazed by one of our students. He has surpassed our expectations. His smooth skin starts to glow. He asks, would you like to come to my place? Seems like the ultimate cosmic come on line. And then I wake up and I look at my alarm clock. and I open up my journal and take some notes. So this is, I'm already sort of sharing my process here. And it's out of this process that the last short story, which Marco just published and edited, came out of. And I started that project working with those quotations from St. Thomas. If you bring forth that which is within you, it will save you. If you do not bring forth that which is within you, it will destroy you. And that story, Maracan, emerged out of that. And you guys gave me a great deal of support and guidance, because the way that that story got finalized came out of our workshop. So I would like to return that favor and learn how to listen better, and also to keep track of a group process, because I do so agree, Zachary, that we do need a safe container. And if you're going to do anything, any kind of intimate work like this, you need a safe container. And you mentioned a non-permeable container. So I think there's a private, private public, and something that's semi-private, semi-public. And I think this is what Marco's talking about, that the systemic, looking at the total system, looking at the micro, and how we want to find that kind of intimacy that you get with good writing, good reading, and also great theater, public performance. You can, you know, go right into the vortex with those performers on stage and create a very close encounter of the fifth kind. And I believe that's an option too. That's another way of thinking about it. I'm just throwing a lot of metaphors out on the table and expecting that all of us can start to do that, and our stories and our metaphors and our fascination and our perplexity can, you know, be something that we can start to reorganize and draw upon as resources. So I think that's the benefit of coming together and working with other writers who are tuned into to one another and who know how to sponsor one another, which is not necessarily a widespread capacity among writers. I found a lot of writers are very prone to, look at Hemingway, look at the big egos that the writing profession tends to attract. And I've had lots of stale and unprofitable experiences in writing groups where there was the teacher who was sort of grandstanding on occasion, you know, giving off their theory of everything. And the writers are trying to stabilize around some teacher's theory. And I think this is what, Marco, you said so expressively in one of your posts about wanting to create a, what did you call it? A new kind of, or you wanted to replace the MFA, an MFA program. Can we have a popular educational process?
Peer-to-peer.
The what? I'm sorry?
Peer-to-peer.
Peer-to-peer. That's what you said. Can we create a peer-to-peer writing group that, I don't know if I am distorting what you said, but kind of replaces the traditional MFA program, which are usually highly competitive, the ones that I'm familiar with, and the exposure I've had to those kind of settings. So I hope that some of this makes sense to you guys. Thank you very much for giving me once again this opportunity to rehearse with you, hopefully at a higher frequency, because the world really needs us right now.
Yeah. Off the back of that, maybe something that could be useful, certainly for me, I want to check in with you guys, because I think the kind of alternate MFA that I would be interested in is one that that once again, only a group like this, I think, you know, can begin to produce, is that we each have our own individual impulses and needs and wants. And I guess I use that really specifically, like there are things that I want from you guys, but there are things that I need that will be hard for me to hear that I also want, right? So, and I want both of those. And then there's going to be kind of almost like the needs and the wants of the, you know, the group that are kind of beyond us all. And I think we can all be really sensitive to that, and really, really feel into it, you know, to know what does this being want to become, and to work with all five of those elements. And so that would be something that I would be really interested in, maybe even beginning with, just to find out. I really want to know, I really want to, or to continue to know what you need, Marco. Like, for some reason, I'm very much connected to that. And I think that's because, you know, I watched the David Bohm documentary that came out like 2 days ago. And it was really great because those of us who remember the iconic double slit experiment, you know, the crazy one that basically challenges relativity and everything else. And they had some new information on it, and they had some new graphics that were really beautiful that essentially were showing some of the things that they've now understood are happening with that, which is the appearance of the implicit order. You know, and they still are trying to prove that, like, there's actually an implicit order. Those of us who are kind of a little more spiritual kind of assume that that's already there, but, you know, it's that meeting place. And why am I saying all that? Because I'm really interested in the implicit order of, like, a group like this, you know, and aligning with that almost in the way that, not aggressively, or I mean, not too assertively, but just to lean into it, you know, in whatever frail human fallible ways we can. John, you probably know the old practice that I think the Quakers used to do in their ceremonies. Every time before they spoke, they would ask themselves the question, is it the time? Is it the place? Am I the one to say it? And does it come from God? You know, just like a really exquisite practice. I mean, I think no matter what denomination you are, I mean, that's just like, pfft. And so, yeah, that's like a bunch of different things, but I would love to maybe, at least from my side, start with, what do you guys, I want to know what you need. So that we can support each other with that very specifically, with all those other elements that are still going to be there. But first and foremost, I want to know what you need, what you think you need.
That's a really great question. And I like that because, there's all kinds of, I mean, we're not exactly a critique group, but I'll just use that word because I can't think of the better one right now. But there is all kinds of critique, and giving the wrong kind of critique at the wrong time is often like harmful to the writing itself. And so I do like when someone shares writing with me and wants feedback, that's, I really think like the first question you have to ask is like, what do you want? So thank you. And I was thinking as you were talking, I think from this group and like, cause I know some of your skills and that you're bringing to it, which are just amazing. The thing that I hope I can get from you is whenever I write, I know that there's always the part that I put in consciously. You know, I set out to write often a fairly straightforward story. And then there's the parts that I'm putting in unconsciously, you know, the deeper currents, the preoccupations that I have below the surface and that always emerge in my writing, whether I intend for them to do it or not. And sometimes that unconscious me is like wiser than I am and can bring new insights. And I think that by having you guys to talk with, you know, by showing you my writing, you can help me pick it apart and find out what those currents are, because they're not always obvious to me the first time I read it or sometimes until years later. And so you guys can help me find them and bring them out. And I thrive on all kinds of feedback too. Like, I like being told when there's a sentence that needs to be fixed or a problem with the chronology of a story. But so it's okay to tell me those things too. But I really, what I'm excited about with this group is that I think you'll be able to help me get at those roots.
That's kind of amazing, Mary. I want to hear from someone else, but I'll just say, yeah, it would be a joy and a pleasure and an honor to explore the derivative communication in your writing. I mean, that's like.
Thanks.
Yes, and that's why we should never throw anything away. Because some things that we think are just, I went off on a stupid tangent. I'll just, don't throw it away. Because very often you'll be halfway through a story and you'll look back and you realize, oh, that tangent that I threw in the wastebasket, I need that now. And you can bring it in. So, yeah. And Zach, as you say, it becomes an honor and a privilege to sponsor another writer's development. And I can't separate that from my own development as a writer, and as a human being.
Yeah.
And hopefully all of our writing, and however way we may produce it, is contributing to our liberation. Mm-hmm. And that's a very deep core value. And I know that others who came before me, who suffered enormously, bothered to write it down and make some coherent sense out of it. And they saved my life. If it had not been for the good writing I was exposed to when I was very young, I would have committed suicide. But because I found such good writers, I went, no, I don't think I'll commit suicide today. I think I'll finish this novel or finish this play or listen again to that piece of music. So I think it's art that saves us over and over and over again. Although those artists perhaps performed under the worst kind of circumstances imaginable, but somehow pulled it together enough to add something. So I just hope to add something of use and value to others in the time that I have left. And also, yeah, and I still have narcissistic wounds, you know, that haven't gone away, no matter how much I've meditated. So I believe that writing is perhaps the most direct way of working with those wounds. And those are blessings for other people because, you know, they oh, well, that guy can do it. I feel courageous to go into my own, the dark side and work out my own stuff. So I think there's something great about working with your obsessions other than working with what you know. You know, they always say, write about what you know other than what you don't know. I think that's terrible advice because I know very little, but I'm obsessed by quite a bit. So I think it was Edmund White, it's a gay novelist I admire a great deal, who gave that advice, and I think it's very good advice. So let those obsessions happen, you know, even though they scare the shit out of you, embarrass the hell out of you. I think that's where the really juicy stuff comes from. Thank you.
Would love to hear from you two other guys, but just before what you bring up, Mary and Marco, this could be another distinguishing feature of an alternate MFA, which is that perhaps there's some way, or at least an invitation to bring forward dreams, the night, specifically the night. I know Johnny would, of course, nod his head, knowing full well where I'm going with this, but to bring the dream, any dreams that we have the night before the meeting, because those will be direct derivative communications from, you know, the unbridled soup of our own personal chaos onto the day. And obviously, you don't want to turn it into a dream group because then you might waste all your time, and time is precious. But there's probably a way of guiding that process that could just get some, you know, it's not too difficult these days to get some, to squeeze some really good meaning out of a dream simply, you know, just to go to the under, you could just give some general themes on how to access and identify, you know, the underplumbing of a dream, the under dynamics. And I think that could really add a whole new dimension to whatever then comes in the feedback, you know, in the group. Again, to speak to your brilliant point, Mary.
That's a cool idea. This I've never kept a dream journal, and I've wanted to, and I think maybe this will be something for me to try for this 12-week period. Mm. That can be my new experiment.
John, you're thinking something?
I am. I'm ruminating on what Zachary just said, and hopefully, I know Zach is very experienced with working with people, so I think the dream of the night before is very potent when you're working with groups, because that sometimes has a lot to do with the group dynamic. Because I don't think we just dream about ourselves. We dream about all of the groups we're members of. And it shows up sometimes right before we have that conference call or we have that appointment with that person. I shared the dream I had the night before, but I also, the dream that I had 2 weeks ago where I am, and this is not typical, I am identifying with a benevolent being. I'm usually identifying with some demonic monster or trying to escape from one, or I'm trying to propitiate some higher intelligence, but it's very rarely that I feel like, oh, this is what an angelic being feels like. And they enter into others who are equal to them, but at a different level, and blesses them unconditionally, and says something like the figure I was portraying to that woman in distress, "You are precious to us. Reflect upon what I have conveyed to you." This does not sound like my diction. It sounds like something else that's coming through this humble servant that I am. And I think this is maybe the beginning of something like St. Thomas. If you bring forth that which is within you, it will save you. If you do not bring forth that which is within you, it will destroy you. And that means the demonic and it means the angelic. We need to be able to bring that angelic dimension in harmony and in balance with the demonic. Or I think our time on this planet is not going to be we're not going to be here for very long unless there are enough people who can train their attention to catch these very brief glimpses into, you know, another reality, which we all currently are evading right now. So I think we've been blessed and cursed with this virus. And it's coming at us, you know. These demonic forces are coming at us in an unprecedented way. So I am ever optimistic, though, because I believe we can anchor ourselves in these spiritual forces so that we can take this on. If it sounds a little Gnostic, good guy, you know, evil versus good, I sort of come out of that world. I was raised a Southern Baptist, and I have a deep connection to that Southern Baptist kind of rhetoric, especially in the Black churches. You saw that kind of charisma that so many Black orators and their command of rhetoric so awe-inspiring, as in Martin Luther King and many, many others. So I'm just sharing that with you because I do think it can restabilize us. Mm. So, and just keeping a dream journal, just making the effort to remember a dream, even if you can't remember it, is enough sometimes. Because later on in the day, you will see something in a window or something in the street, and it'll all come back to you, what you thought you've forgotten forever. So I think just having that intention has a galvanizing effect on our cultural imagination. And we're creating culture here. I think we're tapping into a new culture that wants to happen.
Marco, Johnny, do you want to talk about needs?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how to proceed because I feel connection points with what everyone has said. John's dream, for example, although I'm not inside of it in the way that he's inside of it as the dreamer, speaks to me. So something just about that message, it feels like it applies to me. You are precious to us. I want to hear that. Like, I need to hear that. And and reflect on what we have conveyed to you as well, like that instruction. I could do something with that. Like, it's not a direct communication to me, I don't think or feel, but I feel like my eavesdropping makes it so. My the fact that I've heard it makes it meaningful, and the context in which that's been communicated here also makes that meaningful to me. And the weeping with gratitude, and let me back up a little bit, because the context for this for me, like as far as what I need, is like, I don't think there's anything that any of you can give me immediately as far as feedback or instructions or any kind of material support, like nothing like that could help, except like what happens accidentally. Like, I've again and again been instructed by the others that we've have been interacting in Cosmos, just because like something about what they say speaks to me, or something about the way they say it speaks to me indirectly. And that's all I need. I can give some examples. John referenced a poem one time. It was by Samuel Coleridge, Dejection, an Ode. And I see but do not feel the roses, how beautiful they are.
The sunset.
Yeah. I didn't write down the reference. I didn't know what poem that came from. It took me a long time. It took me like a year and a half before I finally was able to come upon it. Googling did not help in this case. The words that I knew did not come up, but they became for me a kind of seed germ, because as I would go about my day, I would reflect on whether I was feeling what I was seeing, or just seeing it from a detached standpoint, a kind of witnessing standpoint. And then that seed reflection became, in a different context, in another conversation, actually with a couple of other writers, it became the germ for a poem that I went on to write, and the writing of which became for me a sort of self-instruction in how to write the kind of poetry that I want to write. So that was not even in the context, I think, of giving me feedback on my poetry or anything that could have directly been done, but just by the fact that we were having these conversations, and that the right message could be uttered for me to receive. And it just needed to be in the environment. It needed to be uttered. It didn't need to be directed toward me. But the fact that it existed and that I was here to witness it, to receive it, was what was important. I have been working since 2014 on a poem. And so it's been a long time, and it's not like a very long poem either. It's longer than a short poem, but it's not like there are, it's not like I've had to spend a lot of time writing. I've had to spend a lot of time living and churning kind of, and processing a lot of different kinds of information, and then coming to formulations that crystallize some insight into a pattern or into a truth that was previously hidden from me and becomes disclosed, and then to string all those together in a way that formally, like aesthetically, feels really satisfying to me. And when I say to me, though, my like literary and my aesthetic sensibilities are not really separate from those of my peer group. Like, I consider this a peer group. And so I'm, you know, we're reading similar things, we're introducing each other to authors or ideas or concepts. And so, you know, what I have found is that when I've gotten kind of what I thought I wanted, which is like solitude and alone time, and just time to work out my ideas, that I end up drying up because I don't have like a social milieu that makes it part of a dynamic system. It becomes like a dead end, even though it's what I thought that I wanted. On the contrary, like when I've been in relationships with other people in contexts like this, whether it was at school, university, or at Integral Institute with the Integral crowd around Ken Wilber, or when I was doing volunteer work in Central America, and I didn't have exactly other writers, but just other like alive personalities and really passionate, caring, loving, beautiful people. Like, that's what has like inspired me to sing, like, because I want to sing for others. I don't just want to sing for myself. And it's, while on the one hand, it's enough for me personally, if I'm satisfied with the work, I don't need other people to get it immediately. Like, if it works and I know it works, then that's fine. Nonetheless, I ultimately want it to be a gift. I want it to be something that is receivable, could be received by others, and who find resonance and meaning in it. And it enters into the genetic like soup of the, you know, of the collective, and becomes available for others to draw on, just because it's in the environment, not necessarily because it's directed to them specifically. With respect to my poem, it was kind of been an off and on thing where there's times of my life where I'm spending time obsessing over it and times when I can get tired of that and obsess over other things. But when I've learned a lot through the conversations that we've had and how what that's catalyzed in my own reflective process about the structure of it, really just in formal technical sense, like how it is put together, what the components of it are, what the logic of it is, in a sort of poetic, in the poetics of it, in the philosophy, the meaning that's embedded in it, and the music in it. I've also been served a lot by our explorations of voice, which we've particularly done through reading groups, specifically reading Milton's Paradise Lost, reading Whitman, Blake, and Aurobindo. So just having like the opportunity to read out loud with other people, and not even my own work in this case, but just other exemplary works of poetic utterance, that's been feeding my process. And like when I share what I've been working on, you will hear what I mean. It'll be pretty obvious to you, but at the same time, it's not just mimicry. Like, it's really owning and drawing on like the examples and being energized by them, but then doing something that's my own with it. One really specific thing that came is when I did get feedback on that part. So I Am the Singularities, it's essentially a triptych, and it's the name of the poem, but it's also the name of the book. But this poem is like the center of gravity, you know, of the book. Another way that I've visualized it, it's the spine. So it's all the chakras kind of lined up, but it's not all the limbs and it's not all the flesh. It's like the energetic centers, and each like verse in it connects kind of like, could be like DNA. It could be a coil. It has a kind of fractal or a galactic kind of spiraling structure. And you'll find that there are ways that I reference that, that kind of the seed for one poem is contained here, but then in the larger work, it spirals off into its own work, its own piece, its own pedal, its own loop. And one thing that piece of feedback, and I got this from John, is when he heard the first version, he didn't hear as much of a we. He heard more of an I, and the I is central to this poem. It's called "I Am the Singularity," and there's a mantra that's in the poem begins with, the mantra "I am." In the beginning, there was nothing, and I am. But just that hint of feedback that I got led me to change the perspective in this second part that I've been working on over the last year, so that there's the I is backgrounded and a we is foregrounded. And there is I'm trying to reflect, and I am reflecting on a generation. And this is also playing with Ginsberg's poem, Howl, The Best Minds of My Generation. And then that generational sort of metaphor like leads to a lot of other things like waves and quantum physics and the idea of these kind of exponential processes that we're all experiencing right now, and the idea that we're coming to some kind of fundamental transformation in our human experiment. That being kind of a premise of the poem, and us as a generation, and by us, that's kind of loose. It's not just a linear sort of those people born between 1969 and 1970 and 1985 or whatever. It's meant to it's bringing that conversation to a head, I think. And so I've been laboring on this poem since basically last summer, and have gotten far enough into the second part that I feel like confident, like I'm gonna land it, you know, like it's gonna work. And then I have ideas about part three, but it feels to me that this is the time to land it. Like that this is the time to bring it home. And like, I want to just drop it, you know, like the way that like hip hop artists like drop tracks and, you know, has this sort of psychic explosion effect, like in the consciousness of people who hear it. I want to drop it and release it and then move on, you know, because I have a lot more to do. And I feel that this poem for me is sort of a gateway. It's like setting up something that's going to open up into many different channels, but I have to have this like gateway opened, and it's a gateway of the self. It's a gateway of me living through what I got to live through and becoming inside out, going from this sort of inward spiraling motion into an outward spiraling motion. It's sort of like this. I'm making a gesture with my finger to this. and I'm touching my chest as well. And the main thing that I've had to grapple with is impatience. Because through very like rigorous trial and error, I've discovered that no matter what, I cannot force this at all. Like I could bring myself to it, and I could sort of discipline my attention to come back to it again and again, but I cannot force it to be what it is. I cannot force the words to come. When the right words come, they come, and I know that they're right. And sometimes I'm wrong. But if I'm wrong, I find out relatively soon, or it just kind of comes out in the wash. Like I'm able to move forward. And so I want to, like, in this next 12 weeks, to be specific, I want to write another major like section of this poem. And I don't know whether that's 12 lines or 12 verses, like 1,200 lines. I don't know how fast that will come, but I know that my next focal point is on the liminal and the dream world and the kind of subtle that is like hovering in a sort of pre-carnational state. And what's happening in the poem on a subtle level is that there's a trauma being reenacted, and the subject of the poem is in a kind of out-of-body space in this part, and that's going to close. It's going to close essentially like the first half, and then another voice comes in and is a sort of recontextualizes everything that comes before. I hope that's probably vague, but it's just intuitively what I know needs to happen. And so I am very keen on exploring the world of dreaming. It's something I have done at different times in my life, but haven't been actively cultivating recently. I feel that this summer is a good time to do that. And I want my own awareness to just be able to relax and to allow things to come up that I could then like harvest for this next section of the poem. And then I'd like to share that with you and let you respond however you will, because something about how you all respond will give me clues and pointers to what I need to do next. But apart from that, I just want to hear you all talk about your work, and I want to read it because it gives me, sort of feeds me. And then to be in this dialogue, and not always with me, usually, you know, often it's better if it's other people for me. It's better if I can like feed off of the collective energy, and then put that into my work, and then feed that back in to the collective. And then if we got those sort of feedback cycles going, I think that this would start to like pulsate with like that kind of stellar energy.
Makes perfect sense to me. Johnny, is there anything that you need?
Well, yes, I'm interested in, I'm resonating with what Marco has just expressed so eloquently about his own process as an I and as a we. And that he responded to the dream that I had persuades me that we are in a field of all possibilities, and we are centered. If we're not centered, we're in real trouble. But if we are centered, the field will change through our participation. Mm-hmm. And what I want is to create a subtle infrastructure. I don't have to create this, it's already there. It's just basically about paying more attention to what's going on in my life. But this whole idea of collaboration, and when I collaborate, or when we collaborate at our best, that's like what? We've already had a lot of experience doing this. We're not strangers to this process. Marco's just edited my short story. Zach, did you publish something? Or we talked about one of your essays in one of our groups. Like, was that published at Cosmos?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, cool. Okay, so you've had this. We've done this before. We've collaborated before. We've given each other feedback before. Yeah. Mary, I don't believe you have published yet. Have you in the Cosmos?
No, I haven't. No.
Okay, I want to support you in making that happen, if that's something you want to have happen.
Well, yeah, it is something I want to work on. Yeah.
Okay, okay, at your own pace, when it's appropriate. And for me, when I am collaborating on my best, I'm a small craft in outer space, hooking up with another small craft. And we compare our maps. And then we unlink and go off again out into outer space, whatever quadrant of that we're working at. And of course, we can all have our own metaphors for collaborating at our best. That's just the one that popped up just now. But I'm thinking also about the language. This is part of my collaborate. What I want is collaborative, collaboration at my best with others at their best. And I heard this over and over again in Marco's language. I'm going to land it. I want to drop it and release it. And I can't force it. I notice I'm thumping the, I'm creating a rhythm here. Unconsciously. And my question is, of course, I'm not expecting Marco to answer this, but I'm just hopefully creating useful questions, crafting questions, drawing upon the language that the other person is actually using. What kind of it is that it? When I want to drop it and release it and move on, and I can't force it. Does that it have a size or a shape?
It's a it's a beast.
It's a beast.
That it's a, that's also a baby.
Ah, and a baby.
It's a baby beast.
A baby beast. Is there anything else about that baby beast?
It, if I do not bring it forth, it will destroy me.
And what does that baby beast want to have happen?
It wants to eat. It wants to be fed. Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. And another question, if you'll forgive me. I we've worked on this a little bit before, and you said, I want to finish. I want to finish my poem. Previously, as you said in another conversation we had, I want to complete my poem. Today you said, I want to finish. I don't know exactly what the useful question is here, but what determines finish or complete? I don't know, once again, if that's a useful question. You can skip it if you want to, but if it, something comes up, that would be cool too.
I like the word complete better to me. Finish seems to, it has, although it can have the connotation of refining, it also has the connotation of discarding, being finished with, whereas completion to me lets the final thing be intact. I had a conversation about completion with a friend who was coaching me a little bit around, it was a trade, it was a work trade. I'd helped her with some writing, and she helped me with, she's a coach, and she offers a process called immunity to change, which was developed by Robert Keegan, the Harvard developmental psychologist. And we, the idea of completion came up a lot because, and it relates to patience, because completion is like a not having it within anymore. And it's having it like as a full thing that I can hold in my hands, and metaphorically, I have my hands out. It would mean that I could share, it's in the world. It would mean that my job is done, my work is done. Like, and I experience it as like agonizing and ecstatic. And part of me wants to be out of that. Part of me wants not to feel agonized. And I went through many, almost like 2 years, where I would wake up and I couldn't sleep until past 3 or 4 in the morning, typically. Something shifted as I've completed more of the poem, and as I've landed specific parts, and also as my voice has developed and I've gained capacities that I did not have, and realized that I've got the capacities I need now. I don't really need any other capacities. I have what I need to complete the poem. I relaxed a bit and I'm sleeping further. But there's a problem with that too, in that I really liked getting up early, and I liked being awake when the rest of the world was still in bed. And so what came through in that coaching session I did with my friend Nomali I'm becoming more satisfied with smaller completions, and with completions that may have nothing to do with the poem, that are just part of my daily life. I'm sinking further into my daily life as a means of getting closer to the sense of completion that I think I need, and I've been expressing a need for, because the poem is going to take as long as it takes, and I can't control that. So to be stressing and contracting around completing it, I've found to be counterproductive. And at the same time, I also know from experience that unless I stress a little bit and unless I obsess, nothing happens. And so that was part of too the idea of 12 weeks, is that Kayla, my wife Kayla, you know her, John, and she had
girls too.
Yeah, right.
Beatrice and Carmen. I know the whole family.
That's right. but she had gotten a book out, and she reads a lot. It was called the 12-week work year or something like that. But the idea of chunking your time into smaller segments that where you can accomplish something concrete, and that just being a time, like a frame that could be useful, that we could look at a period of time where we want to make concrete progress on our work, and I could imagine completing something, whether that was a verse or the whole poem or story or a chapter or a book, if that's the direction you're going in. And that kind of like a flocking behavior, if we were all completing together, we might have an easier go of it than if we were trying to do it alone. And I have the particular situation of the two kids, and well, Zachary as well, but and I have my mom, taking care of my mom, and I'm dealing with real estate transactions. The infrastructure that we are setting up here is almost essential, like to just keeping my poetic life on track, I think. So I don't have anything else to say on that.
You're complete.
I'm complete.
Zachary, can I mention something? I love your hair. It's very Byronic today.
Oh, thank you.
Very romantic of you in that little cabin.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Johnny.
I wanted to share something also about our process as writers and thinkers and collaborating in the past, collaborating in the future, and we actually have been in a writing group previously, and this is sort of a technical question, but there's something about, I was reading something that you offered, and I made a few notes on it, and I actually thought about it a lot, and I was going to, I wanted to articulate that. I especially remembered the dead body in the park. And I had some questions about that. And I think at the next meeting, you weren't there. And I felt, well, And I think at the next and the following meeting, I wasn't there. So there was a kind of, it just didn't happen. But I also feel this may be a technical question of knowing when to, you know, these public forums when we write a response to someone else's writing. It's very tricky doing that. So I have this mixed feelings about the difference between writing and talking. And I feel much more confident rather than just scribbling notes about someone else's writing and inputting in my computer and saying, okay, there, that's done. I much feel better about, okay, I'm in a space, semi-public here and sort of private. And I could just ask very simple questions, which would be a kind of response to someone else's material. And then they could respond to my response however way they want to. So I think that could be more generative than, this is based upon my experience of trying to write it down, writing feedback down, and hoping that the person who reads it gets something useful out of it, which there's no guarantee of that. And I'm not saying that talk is always the best thing either. There needs to be a good blend, because I've had good written responses from people that I think has been useful. But I think I want to find something different besides that traditional IOL writing conference where all the writers are sitting around nervously around a round table and all of their scripts or writing material, whatever, is in them. Everyone has a copy of it. And, you know, some people are really good at giving feedback. Some people are lousy at it. And I think it just, and we're all dealing as writers with previous trauma, whether we're aware of it or not. So we've all been traumatized. We wouldn't need to write, right? So I think we need to be very delicate with this. So I'm just sharing that with you, Zach, because I'm afraid that I may have come off as indifferent or uninterested in your process as a writer, which it certainly was not my intention, but it was bad timing. It just didn't happen. But now it's happening 2 years later. So I just wanted to share that with you guys, because I think it's really important that sometimes when I put myself out there and I write something, and it's especially, and it could be very embarrassing. My obsessions are very embarrassing ones to have. But I also think, okay, if another person's doing something very challenging for them, where it takes some certain amount of courage, you certainly want to be able to be there so you can catch the rhythm. I think that's so important that we're able to catch each other's rhythm. It's so much fun when that happens. And then we can toss it back to the person. And when groups can do that, I think it can be quite exhilarating. So I hope some of what I just said makes sense, because I know we're in this space together and we're trying to figure out the best way of working. And I'm thinking about a task I have for myself. Ezra Pound and T.S. Eliot were critic poets. And The Wasteland came out of a direct encounter with Pound as critic, who told him to cut this. And there's a book out on that. So you see the original poem as conceived by Eliot. And it's awful compared to what happens after a master critic, friend, scholar, works with it. And I got another book here in my library. I've never read it, but it's about Elizabeth Bishop, who had a working relationship with James Merrill. They were both gay. And this was in the 50s when that was totally taboo. And they were poets and they were very good buddies, actually. And he was a very wealthy man. He actually supported her. He made her writing career possible through his subsidies of her. Anyway, I read her one of her most sublime poems. I read a rough draft of it. Boy, did it suck. It was just terrible. I have a book on this, on Elizabeth Bishop. I think this is the time now for me to go into this very rich literary history that we are all the recipients of. All these previous practitioners, we think that they had just the luck of the draw. Think again. They stumbled really, really badly. But they did find, I think, sponsorship. They found competent critics or reviewers or friends who were able to catch their rhythm, figure out what the hell they were up to and what they wanted, and feed that back to them. So I think this would be a fun opportunity for me to do something that I've wanted to do, but just haven't had much motivation to finish it, to go into the letters of John Keats, or the letters of Emily Dickinson. She wrote a lot of letters. And letters of Elizabeth Bishop. And she wrote to many poets, and to Ezra Pound and Eliot, and look at their, you know, look at their grievances and their complaints and their confusion. Because I think what they did with that is kind of remarkable. And that they didn't do that, no man or woman is an island unto themselves. It's just impossible, I think, to think of that ourselves as separate beings, hermits in a cave, trying to come up with something interesting.
Can I respond to that with the time?
Sure, please do. Please stop me if I'm blabbing. I apologize. Thanks.
Yeah, I remember that time, Johnny. And I remember feeling that something had gone unspoken between us, and I wasn't exactly sure what it was. But I mourned it a little bit, just in a good way. I mean, I recognized it and I felt that. So I just wanted you to know that I knew something was in the air then. And I really appreciate you mentioning that, because it just means that we were connected to that. So that's beautiful for me. And maybe now's the moment to also just express my needs in this process. And I'd love to jump off of also what you said, Johnny, which is, I think a lot of writing groups from a psycho-emotional perspective don't really know what they're doing when they give feedback. They don't actually understand anything of what they're doing at all. And I think we can do a lot better than that. Because I agree that this is a very, very sensitive topic. Which is not to say that we have to be oversensitive to it, but just to honor it. I think good writing is connected to our traumas. And so good feedback has to be in some ways connected to the therapeutic process, which doesn't mean that we're going to become each other's therapists, but it means we have to aspire to that level of sensitivity. I sometimes see the therapeutic process these days, or really, you could say almost any conversation, quite frankly, around, you know, lowercase t truth with each other, you know, especially in families. I think people hide behind the truth to hurt each other. You know, we know this. We've all experienced it probably at some point. And so we can either bring, you know, a sledgehammer to each other's work, or we can bring a scalpel, you know, or we could bring a laser, or we could bring the kind of, you know, multidimensional phasing properties that you just described in your dream, Johnny, you know, where nothing is felt, but everything is presenced. And that for me is what I'm really would, you know, love to welcome you guys, as much as obviously, you know, I know you're going to be honest and truthful, but just to treat me and, you know, each other with the kind of sensitivity that you would, you know, a woman, a mother holding her dead baby. How would you speak to her? You know? Not to make it over dramatic, but just as a kind of, you know, Zen stick to the third eye to bring us down to the kind of sensitivity that I think we're all working with and looking for and welcoming. Yeah, that's what I've got, I think. Maybe one more little piece, just on the point of process. I think something I'd like to also bring, to whatever degree it feels right to, is I'd like to support us to be able to move through. I'd love to support the velocity of this. Because I think it's not, I won't be, I mentioned this to Marco, that I definitely have a very actualized feminine side. I think all of us do. I think Cosmos does. I think we can admit that part of what is wonderful about the feminine is that it's out of time. It's not about timing. It is about timing, but it's not about getting anywhere on time. And so I want to see for myself first and foremost, but to whatever degree the group needs, to bring in that masculinity that keeps the train going. You know, that for me would be useful and therapeutic and supportive. And the last little piece just around, this might be too much, but maybe I just kind of throw it in, you know. It's something that I've noticed in kind of my own life that, and once again, Johnny, you probably have a lot of experience with this, but the idea that, you know, when we give feedback and when we're working with our own work, it's very often that we're going to align with certain archetypes, like actual archetypes of being. Marco, I've seen you align with archetype, you know, and then you're not the, you know, pathetic old dad joking, you know, hipster from Boulder that you are, right? You're something completely different. And we don't want to try to force ourselves to say that we want to become the archetype, because as Jung lambasted Nietzsche with, you know, there's inflation in that. Like, we want to know that the archetype possesses us and we possess it, and it's, but it's not really us. And we're not supposed to actually be the archetype. You try to do that, you'll go insane. And it's also exhausting, because we have to come back to the pathetic us. So once again, speaking into potentially some kind of, you know, just to put on the table to the alternate MFA program, I think it's really interesting to double click more into what we're all doing at all times. Like, are we going to have a section or a meeting where we are in our small human self, and it's chatty and it's silly and it's stupid and in all the right ways, and we can just appreciate derivative communication. And then maybe there's a time where it's like, it's more meditative. Maybe we do decide we want to step into those archetypes and just see that as an exploration. I'm not even assertively inviting this. I'm just putting it on the table for the fact that I know that's happening anyway. So a lot of appreciation for all of you guys. Just maybe end with that.
Yeah, this has been a really good meeting to just, got lots of ideas now in my brain about thinking about processes and makes me really excited for the next 12 weeks.
So, okay, on process then, we have 90 minutes. We could spend more. I kind of want to spend around that much time. For me, that doesn't exhaust me. It leaves me with some leftover energy, which I need for the rest of my day. And I don't want to share anything yet. So that leaves the three of you. I'm going to get there soon. But it's kind of like a magic trick where if you don't have it, it's pointless to share if the trick doesn't even work yet. You know, like, you can't share like half the trick. You have to like just get to a certain point. So I'm going to pull a rabbit out of my hat, but the rabbit is still like being born. it's furry. It's got like a little peach fuzz on it and stuff. It's nice. It's alive. No rabbits are being harmed in the production of this poem, but the rabbit is not quite ready to be pulled out of the hat. And so we have 90 minutes. Four of us, potentially five if Heather joins, and I imagine we can cover one or two people and then leave enough space around that for chatty, just whateverness, and or meditative, like deepening, depending on, you know, our mood. So what do you have to like offer, if you have something to offer that we could, and by you, I mean any of you, that we could review next week and read before then? And do we want to set some kind of, I don't know, like deadline, like send it to us by the Friday before or something like that, so that we all have time, or the Wednesday, maybe the Friday before, you know, having the weekend and a few days to review
between the Wednesday and the Friday, maybe.
In other words, we meet every other, like every two Wednesdays or second and first and third. So the Friday before the Wednesday could
one
be.
Little.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Agreed. I like that.
Yeah. I was thinking the same.
Super. And maybe I liked what you said. I think one or two per meeting is right, because I think there's no way we can do a discussion in, you know, half an hour or less. So, yeah.
Do Zach and Mary, do you have something that you wanted to show to the group?
I mean, I don't have something right this minute, but if I knew that a week from Friday I had to post something, then I would get it polished up. I have like, it already exists, but the process that I want to do involves kind of ripping open all the seams and putting it back together. And I could do that if I knew.
Yeah. Now, would it have to be not this Friday? Is the meeting every 2 weeks or every week?
Every two.
Every two. 2 weeks. Okay, great. So it would have to be
submission put in shape to next Wednesday, next Friday. Mm-hmm. And I do have something. I mean, I also feel a little as if my prestige was already half shown, because I think a lot of my work is already up there, but I have been reworking it. But I have what I think could be a beginning that was reworked, has a lot taken out, has a lot more put in, and it's, you know, it's personal as usual with my stuff, but it's an interesting opening, and I would be willing to share that. And I guess maybe for my sake, there's also, and I know we have to kind of round up here, but I would love to ask just how much you guys remember or have read, just so I'm aware of that. I feel like Marco and Johnny, you probably have read quite a bit of it from what I remember.
I do remember large sections of it. I think Jeffrey was working on something too. And then I was working on something. I think Heather presented something. Mary, did you present something? I don't think I stayed with the group long enough, because I got a little overwhelmed with several personal crises. So I have to, when I'm a critic at my best, I have to work on that. Because I think when I'm in a very creative state, that's when my most criticism is useful. And as you said, Zach, most people are lousy. They as soon as they criticize someone, they get really nervous and they get in a really hunkering down into a very negative state usually. And we really, then the recipient of that is responding to their lousy state rather than what they're actually communicating. So it's very tricky. I want to be relaxed.
As opposed to the work.
Yeah, exactly.
Another challenge.
Exactly. Because we're still nervous about hurting each other's feelings, or I have to be tough and, you know, get the negative masculine energy, you know. Anyway, I agree with you about what you said about archetypes. It's so important. But I just want to maybe when I make comments in between sessions, it would be mostly about logistics, about timing and what we need to read and that kind of thing, and questions about that. But I would like to reserve any kind of a response to
these
meetings where I feel like I can get into a creative state with other people. And from that creative state, I can share the best critic I can be.
I would second that. I think that's a great way to leave the container uncontaminated. The minute we start to do, I mean, text at this point, I think is actually just a flat out contaminated medium, with the exception of the most simple expressions, and email is getting close behind. So, I mean, this is where we have to come back here. So I'm like, I love that recommendation, John. Second it.
I can, I'd be glad to reread anything, Zach, you've already presented, if you want to feel like
you need that. Just say myself, like, because you're working on a longer project and your question was how much of it we'd read. I have to confess, I don't remember, but I'm willing to catch it up so that, like, I'm willing to read the previous chapters so that we can work on the most recent one for you.
I'd love to just ask you guys a question. So I can do one of two things. I can either do my best to present to you what I have chronologically, some of more likely of which you will have read, or I probably have two or three, maybe four sections that are new, but that will be completely out of chronology, but you will have less familiarity with. So what do you
think? I think this is important that if it's a work in progress and you're trying to find where this piece fits with this piece, and that's a tricky thing because you have to sort of zoom out as a reader to hold those different pieces. So you have to have enough of the puzzle, the pieces of the puzzle to work with that. But that also may not be the kind of feedback you need. You're working on this particular piece of the puzzle, and so you need to sort of zoom in to that.
You might be right.
So you need to let us know. I think each of us needs to let us know. These are all the pieces I have. Can you look at the whole? I just want you to focus attention on this piece. That would be my feedback to the group about my own process, because I'm in the middle of, I'm starting something that I've been thinking about for decades, really. And I want to, but I also have a lot of other things that are almost finished that I could bring forward. And that would be a different kind of process. You know, things that are close to being finished and things that are still a mess. So I'm just sharing that with you guys. That we should let each other know what the status is of whatever we're presenting.
Do you have any preference, Marco?
I kind of would want to see if you have one, a table of contents, and then what the sections are that you've shared, which I've read them all. I don't remember all of them, but I remember the last one, which was like a phenomenology of meditation, you know, that you shared that, you know, as...
I remember the South of France, and discoing and hanging out with a beautiful babe or whatever. I remember that you were a teenager, right? I remember the narrator as a teenager grappling with all those that chemistry that's happening, that's changing. So I remember that. It's still in my, somewhere back there. So I could easily revive it. I'm sorry, Mark, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, what I would suggest, or at least for me would be useful, is whatever is useful for you, but as a reader it'd be helpful to know where a piece falls, not necessarily in the chronology, but more in the contents, in the architecture of the book.
That's useful. I can provide you like a super short synopsis of what the order is. I don't think that I'm going to jumble up the order, because it's developmental, so it would make even less sense. It's like it's like the normal chronology was very stage coherent. So I can provide that with you and then maybe miss a stage or two if I feel like it's not ready or, you know, it bore you. Because I feel more preference what Johnny previously mentioned, but also to give you things that are as new as possible, just so it's fresh.
My answer would be that it would be whatever you feel that we can be the most helpful. Mm-hmm. On, with the very small caveat that this has happened to me before, where I get feedback where someone says, "Oh, such and such a thing wasn't very clear," and it would have been clear if we'd read the previous chapters. And so, but you can just dismiss those comments completely, because you know that if we'd read chapter one, it would have. If that makes sense.
It does.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
Makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm. But I'm also a very, I love the sentence. What was the one in my dream? Mary McCarthy at Power Relations. I don't know if that's even a sentence, but there's something about, I can do a lot with that. Mary McCarthy. Is there anything about Mary McCarthy at? Is there anything else about at and power relations? What kind of power relations? So I feel like the unit of the sentence, as it fits within the unit of the paragraph, as it fits within whatever piece you're working on, or the stanza, if you're working on poetry, I think that's a whole lot of fun. So I would even hope this far pitch, but even if you have a paragraph of something and you may want to just chunk it down, and just complete this paragraph. And that doesn't need to have a whole lot of background for a reader, because you can pick up any poem or any play or any piece of prose and just zero in a paragraph and you can find something really interesting about it and respond to it. So I would like just to suggest that, so that we don't get too overwhelmed in trying to work with this, you know, you're doing War and Peace or, you know, Moby Dick or something, but you have this group next week and you have to present something to them. It can be a really panic inducing. But I think if you just say, oh, well, I'm just working on this paragraph, I'm just going to please read this paragraph and we can play with it together, tinker around. Because I think that's basically what writers are doing. We're just tinkering around with sentences, actually. And I think that micro kind of attention can really create wonders. And you know, it's really funny when you finish something and someone says, I don't like that word, which has recently happened to me. A reader of one of my, the story that just got published, they didn't like the fact that my main character used the N word. Remember this, Marco?
Yep.
I think I presented. And he said, could you just drop the N word? Because I love the story. It moved me very much. But the N word, and this was a Caucasian person, offended them. And I just, you can't imagine how impossible that would be for me to drop that word. I'd have to rewrite the whole thing. You can't just, because, and especially if it comes out of something that you believe is true, even if it's painful and ugly, if it's true, you can't just drop it because it potentially could offend someone. You know what I'm talking about? And I think Marco said some useful things about the relationship between the writer and the editor, which is different from the writer and the critic. So I think we should all be mindful of that kind of thing too, because it is like a hologram. You know, you can take one sentence and the entire novel is embedded in that sentence.
I think Serrano de Bergerac said the same thing about the play he was writing inside that play.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So next time, Mary and Zachary.
Yeah.
Time after that, we'll see. Could be myself and John, or if Heather comes along, her. That's our plan. And yeah. And I don't have anything else to add. Just one last thought about the groups of writers and how, you know, no writer is an island. They critiqued each other's work. They gave feedback. They also published each other's work. And that's, I think, one of the things that could come out of this is that, you know, this is a semi-private, it's an underground space. But what is underground can become overground, you know, once it's ready to be released and offered to the world.
And the recording will be available to us who are in this group. It's correct. Not necessarily, we don't have to post it on the
form. No, I would prefer not to. I mean, I would rather it be in this channel. So if others are in the channel, Jeffrey and others who may come in the future, they could access it. But that there's some membrane.
That's right.
To get in. And I don't know, we don't have an application form or anything. Maybe we need one. But I kind of like having the readership being kind of the filter where, you know, you've participated in a readers group, something that's not as personal, but where we can get to know you. And then from there, filter into the writers group where you share something more that's personal, something more coming out of, you know, your own artistry. We've had some discussion around this too in the forum, and there's a long topic about this.
I just think it's wonderful. The archival nature of this is, I think, accelerating the subtle infrastructure for good and for bad. I mean, we were releasing a lot of demons and probably a lot of angels, but that the relationship between the angelic and the demonic is happening. And I think that this is, you know, storytellers and shamans and wise men and women have always given their attention to these liminal zones during crisis. So I think it's great to have an archive, and I really listen to them. I'm maybe the only person who does, but I listen to them not just once but twice, because I'm very, very interested in the speech and the rhythm and the gesture and the look in the person's eye when they say that particular word. And that to me is has something to do with the performative and the oral traditions from which all of the written words we use come from. Someone had to speak them before we could write them down. And I think that's the tension that I feel between the oral and the written. Because in many ways I like to write the way I talk, but I really don't talk the way I write. It's sort of hard to do that. Actually, I don't talk at all the way I write. Because I usually write with very monosyllabic kind of, it's very, very tricky stuff that we're doing, and the stylistics that are involved is extremely fascinating. So I love the archive, and that we would have access to it is, I think, very useful and could accelerate our process, because we often may forget what we said in these encounters, but that you don't have to worry about taking notes, although I do take notes. But if you have an archive and you can review the archive, it's astonishing how much I miss. Because I get very absorbed in this moment with this other people and their faces and their voices. And, but when I have the archive, I get a much more of a, I can step back. And it's not so performative. It's you're just a voice among all these other voices and faces. And I realize, wow, I missed that. It just went right by me. Something brilliant someone said. And if I had sort of had the wherewithal, if I could have slowed it down a little bit and given a shared attention to that, who knows what could have happened. So I think that kind of feedback you can give to yourself by observing these performances in this public space can be very, very generative if you can feed it back in the next encounter with that person or whoever, the cluster of persons who show up. It can be create a self-reflexive, virtuous self-reflexive loop that I think could make this technology a blessing rather than a curse. I don't think we're there yet. I think it's the flat screens, I think, are doing enormous damage to our nervous systems, but we're also seeing some miraculous things coming through these flat screens. So I hope hopefully we can re-enchant this technology. That's my desired outcome. Thank you all once again.
But before I forget, Marco, you mentioned Heather. I think it's really worth considering, or at least letting her know that, you know, if she wants to be part of it, to be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that at some point we need to close the airlock.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a vote, you know.
Good. I'll get in touch with her. I've been meaning to anyway, and I'll see what's up and see if she wants to join us.
It'd be great to see her again.
Yeah, I agree.
Guys, I'm gonna, it's getting on 7 here and I'm actually getting kind of peckish for supper. So I think I'm gonna jump out of this call now.
Yep.
I'm ready to go too.
Yeah, it's been really good to see you. And as John said, minor details will work out in the chat. And looking forward to seeing you all in 2 weeks.
All right. Likewise. Good to see you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.